and welcome to Off the Shelf, Festival of Words. In this special podcast episode, writer and curator Akeem Balogun talks to projectionist Zarin about their collaboration on the up-and-coming installation Words, Vision and Sound, a multi-sensory literary experience informed by three specially commissioned texts.
So I'm Akeem Balogun, a writer based in Sheffield, working with Off the Shelf for Words, Vision and Sound. And I'm with Zarin, projectionist.
Hello, I am Zarin, projectionist, visualist and artist, living in Sheffield as well, having a great time.
So Zarin, to start, how did we actually meet? It was through Nick.
It was through Nick,
I remember.
But I think I'd heard about you before through the Mondo Radio guys, Dan, who works at the radio. He said you'd done a book launch for them a while ago.
Yeah, Dan G, yeah, that was a sneaky book launch. I think it was more of a party, to be honest. I won't say anything more on that. But yeah, I've known Dan G for years, and he tends to be in tune with a lot of creators, in fact. But I remember I was speaking to a friend of mine called Adam Bakri, so quite a few names are going to come up. And I said to him, I've got this idea to sort of put words at the forefront, and I need someone who can make words spin around a room. And I thought, well, this is going to be impossible. And he said he knows someone, and he mentioned Nick. So I got in touch with Nick, and I think Nick was just had a lot of stuff going on. And he mentioned that. Yeah, then he mentioned Zarin, and then obviously got in touch with you. And I think the first thing I said is this possible? Like, can you make the words circle around people in a room?
I remember. Mm-hmm. It was the most possible thing I can do as well. After you said that, I initially thought of 100 other ideas we could do with all the words and making them like not just move around the room, but like have them animated and like coming out of the room. And like something I really dislike in art is just having a screen, just having a big rectangle behind the performers, because it's just so trite, I think, and it's much better to use the space that it's in rather than just have a rectangle behind the performer. It's a lot more natural and less obtrusive just having a big square that people look at. I much prefer just using the space. That's why I was so excited when you wanted to use the space, because that's exactly what I like to do.
Yeah, so I remember going into an Event Central, obviously where the event is taking place, and I'm just trying to record a shaky video and take pictures so you can see what it looks like. But as someone who's not involved in project, well, most people aren't involved in projection. I think it's almost kind of a niche, well, from the outside looking in, because I thought you're gonna need some kind of science fiction type machine in the center to shoot out lights to get it to spin around. But when you actually explained it, it was like, oh, there's software for it, there's applications for it, like it's actually a thing. And I think I think you said to me before that when people go to like events, whether it's a rave party or a festival, and they see all the lights and stuff, that there's actually someone behind that who's actually made that. But because you rarely see the person involved in it, you know, regular people like myself can be just so far removed from how it's made and just think it takes the world to make happen. But obviously when you explained it, it was possible.
It's an underutilized kind of tool, to be honest. I don't know why more people don't use it more in everything they do, because I think it's so applicable to a lot of different stuff. Just using like light and interesting where it weighs rather than just having like a beam for everyone to look at.
And it can really bring stuff to life. And that's the whole sort of, that's the main point of the event. Because when you write, you know, which I do, and especially if you've written something people really like, they might say to you, oh, this would be great as maybe a comic book or a film or some kind of performance, that's a compliment in itself. But not to get too philosophical, but I've always thought if a story's written first, then the sort of words are almost like the highest interpretation of that story. And then I say everything else is almost an extension. Film, music, performance, anything related to it, it's just an extension. So I thought, what would be a good way to sort of take the words and just really sort of animate it and just amplify it so people can view it in the same sense as like the same kind of realm as films and games and stuff, because I think the words can often be left behind.
So a fact that I like is there was a researcher called Albert Mehrabian, and he was one of the first researchers which broke down kind of face-to-face communication, and he found that communication is like 55% non-verbal. Only 7% of what we say is the actual words, and the rest is kind of like how we say it and how we perceive the other person saying it. So what I like to do is extract all of that part of communication that isn't the words and kind of like animate the concepts behind what they're trying to communicate. So for example, one of the stories is about, on the face of it, it's about someone having their husband trapped in a hole.
Yeah, Selma's, yeah.
And I really liked that idea. You can easily tell what they're trying to say behind it like that. And that was a really visual story for me. I could instantly see all this stuff flying around in my head and all these different types of animations that I wanted to make for in it. And sometimes I might not be able or have the time to produce what's in my head, but it's so rewarding being able to take like a story like that that is so visual and make something for it. So what I'll be doing is just taking elements of that story and kind of putting it in the space rather than just having one emanation of the story. If someone's speaking it, you only have kind of one locus of where you're trying to have it coming from, and everyone will be interpreting that differently in their heads. So it's nice to have more of an anchor for everyone to be like, okay, this is what that kind of story looks like, as opposed to just everyone constructing it in their own head. You're kind of giving them something for to base that story off of, really, which is why I like doing it so much, really.
But how do you go about in actually, because this was my question when we were in Event Central together and you were showing me the actual words on the wall. Like, how do you actually go about in getting that written word and, you know, sort of writing it in light, if you want, turning it into a projection, getting it to explode, determining the size, being able to, the main thing, being able to have it move around the audience. Like, what's the actual process? Because it's exciting to regular people. Like me.
There's a lot of different processes that you can do. What I like to do is I take a lot of key themes and then I paint them or sculpt them in virtual reality. So I've got a lot of different software that I use, but the main one I use is kind of OpenBrush, which is an open source kind of virtual sculpting environment. So I'll take one of the words, like the aqueduct, for example, and I'll paint out the word and I'll paint out like some representation of the word, like an aqueduct, for example. Okay. So I'd paint that and then I would like film that in VR with a virtual camera. I'd move around the space with a virtual camera. And then I take that animation and then I put it into another piece of software which actually projects the animation onto the walls. And that allows me to map the animation to a certain part of the wall or make it move in a certain way, slow it down.
So there's almost two steps to it, or two filters or two, I don't know, machines if you want.
Yeah, there's kind of like the creation process and then there's like the animation process, which can be different or they can be the same. It depends how anyone wants to do it, really.
So looking at the story he's talking about is Under the Aqueduct by Selma Dabar, and she's one of the writers involved in the, obviously, in Words, Vision and Sound. She's from, she's a Palestinian British author, and she's excellent. But how, and it's this one, I think it's the longest story out of the three. There's a story by Laura Bowie, she's from Liverpool, and there's one from James Giddings, who's from Sheffield. His is the shortest, Selma's the longest. So how long would it take to sort of, to apply what you've just said, because there might be 1,500 words in the story. Like how long does it take for you to sort of animate them? Because there's certain words that you're going to pick out that, you know, you think resonate and then give them some kind of effect. But how long is it all about how much sort of work you put into it, or is it just a slow process all the way around?
In my opinion, it shouldn't matter how many words are in the story. There'll still be like central themes or certain things. There might be like within each paragraph, there might be like a different kind of word that we're trying to emphasize or something. But those are all pieces of the puzzle when you finish the whole thing and it's all like put together. It should be very obvious like what it's about or something. And it's more just about expanding the story.
So how about getting it in time with the sound? Because Selma's story, person who's adding the music or the ambience, the sound design, if you want, is a Utah, Sheffield sort of, you know, producer. His music's quite energetic, but what he's doing here will be a bit more restrained and quite slow burning. How would you go about getting the, well, how are you, sorry, going to go about and getting the, because to me, it feels like it'll be quite difficult to have the words sort of be in time with the projection. So we've got Ryder Shafiq, he's doing a narration, and Georgia Williams, another narrator who's working on Selma's story, which we're still talking about. So you've got those two voices and you've got the sound behind it Utah's made. Like for me, envisioning how that audio and that narration fits in with the projected words, how do you make all of that? And I think you did show me, but how do you make all of that work in time so the words aren't moving too fast for, you know, for the sound and the narration so people can sort of follow it?
It's all timing based, really. So there's multiple ways to do it. You can either like trigger them by hand, which is, I imagine, what I'll be doing for the performance. So when they say, you know, hotel or something, I'll press the button, which triggers the hotel animation. And then from there, I can adjust like the speed of the animation. So if they're taking slightly longer to say it rather than in rehearse, I can then slow it down. So I have a lot of like quite fine control over.
So you can adjust it live then?
Yeah. It's all done very live. Well, I like to do it live because it's more personable and you can get more control out of it rather than just playing a video, which is the whole thing. Normally when I make the animations and stuff, I'll sketch out a virtual version of the space and just sit in the space and just imagine like what it will look like. And I'll put projectors, I'll draw a little box where the projectors are going to go. Some people do take the measurements of the space, but I like to do it more by eye. I like to do it. Everything's very site specific for what I do. So that's an important part of doing it, in that nothing's transferable and it's all very individualized to everywhere that I go to.
That's fabulous though. I mean, I think that's been one of the greatest things to come from sort of creating this event. And I've said to pretty much everyone involved that like what Zarin is doing, like I said earlier, literally is the heart of the entire event. And it's so fitting that it's called Words, Vision and Sound, because the vision part is such, of course visually you can see the words, but obviously everything you've just said, like the amount of things that sort of have to take place or that you can make take place to create what's happening visually, it's like it's just so extensive. So as an audience member on the 22nd at Event Central, you won't be rooted to one spot. There'll be enough room for you to sort of turn and, you know, follow the words as they're projected around you. So if you've ever seen a music video, a lyric video, where the lyrics are popping up, you have to kind of, you have to sort of keep up with it. But as the words are going to be, would it be 3D, 4D? Is it 3D when it's circling someone? How would you describe it?
I guess it's three dimensions.
So when it's, because it's three dimensional, even if you're the slowest reader, you could literally just follow those particular words as it passes around you, and that way you can keep up with the actual words on the being projected. But at the same time, having that narration there behind it as well, you can also hear the words as well. And usually if you're listening to something while reading it, it's almost like cheating. It makes it so much more easier to follow what's happening. But you'll be able to move back and forth, and you know, we're encouraging people to sort of be inside the story and walk about.
More of an experiential thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Than just like a passive experience.
Exactly. So even when people call it an art installation, I think when I think of an installation, I don't think of something that's that mobile for some reason. Maybe because all the art installations I've been to usually just sort of just seeing something that's been installed. But I think because we're talking about sort of light here, you know, it's moving, you know, it's going to be quite vibrant. It could very well be quite dreamlike, and it could be, so hopefully people feel like that when they're there.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the festival, please visit www.offtheshelf.org.uk. We'd love to hear your thoughts and responses on social media. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.